Hello and welcome to the Das Nostalgia Podcast, episode 1, and hopefully not the last one. I am your host, Anatoly, and today with me I have a very special guest. Sir, please introduce yourself.
Hello everyone, my name is Igor Artemov. I'm from Putin's Russia, so I promise there will be no politics today. So I'm just from Russia. Used to be a gaming journalist, worked on some major websites and not websites dedicated to games. So it's my subject and I can talk whatever I want to. Thanks, Anatoly, for inviting me for your first podcast. I'm not used to it and so do you. So we're just two unexperienced DOS gaming players.
Absolutely. Don't judge this too harshly, although I'm sure nobody
else will. Oh, I will.
You will? I know you will, but I hope nobody else will. Yeah, this is, I think, is the first DOS-related podcast ever in the world. So let's try to make this good. All right, so the reason why I wanted to start with Igor, who is a good friend of mine, I guess, is because every once in a while, and well, actually pretty often, people always hit me up about DOS Nostalgia, and they're like, how do you know all these games? You played all these games, blah, 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 you're young, and this and that and the other. And I always have to explain myself that the gaming situation in my country was very different from the old civilized world. I hope this didn't show up on the audio. This is like the doors being open and closed in my apartment. Whatever. Basically, what I really want to get to is that in Russia, in Soviet Russia, really, there was no gaming hardware, no nothing. We had like a bunch of arcade machines, which I think all worked from reverse-engineered Atari stuff. But basically, there was no home computer platforms until, you know, the fall of communism opened the borders and opened the trade.
They were only in some engineering
institutions, which also comes in play. Yeah. Basically, once we opened the borders and we had, like, import personal computers, they're mostly IBM PC compatibles.
ZX Spectrum.
Yes, exactly. The only other thing for home, what you had, you could have like a reverse engineered Spectrum, ZX Spectrum knockoff, which is what I used to have.
I never had it. So
when I was very little.
I have nothing to say on this.
Okay.
Subject.
But on the other thing, all those organizations and everything in the mid to late 80s started getting those, XTs and all the other, maybe if you were really fancy, a 286. In sort of government organizations and in businesses after the trading was open. And besides that, there was not a single gaming platform in the country until later in the early 90s, somewhere around 92 or 93, we started importing Taiwanese, Famicom knockoffs. But that's a whole different thing.
Of course, we should mention that there was a kind of revolution in Russia in 92. So,
of course.
The situation wasn't stable and not many people cared about PCs or DOS gaming at all.
Absolutely.
Most of the gaming was due to piracy, and your mother get a game from some of her co-workers and bring
absolutely
it to you on
so I was just
disks
about to bring this up, because computers were initially set up in government organizations and businesses, and there was not even copyright didn't exist. The copyright law in Russia didn't exist till mid-90s, and I think officially till 97, 96?
Probably when
around that
Soyuz
time
appeared.
Yes, so 96, let's take it. Yeah. So nobody thought twice, everything was public, and people started playing PC games in the government organizations, and of course we have this Soviet mentality layover where people started stealing computers from the places where it worked and just write them off as a loss.
And in Moscow we had a special place called Garbushka, mm-hmm. where you could buy everything from
anything?
Floppy disks to
VHS
video
tapes, anything
and,
you wanted, nothing,
just
even
films,
remotely,
games, music,
legal.
Everything. Good of course, times. Illegally.
Of course, illegally. But yeah. was it illegal? Because we didn't really have laws to make it illegal.
Yeah,
so
there was no alternative.
There was no alternative. That was the only way you could buy stuff back in the day. And if you didn't buy stuff, you traded stuff. You copied tapes on your own. You copied VHS tapes on your own if you had the facilities. And of course, you copied games on your own, floppy to floppy. That's how everything spread. And yeah, so this is my background. Basically, lots of pirated games and stolen computers back in the late 80s, early 90s. But my question is, do you remember the first time you came in contact with, you know, a PC and a game on PC? Do you have like a specific memory?
Oh, specific memory about specific game. I remember, well, my mom used to work in some company, I think it was called Informatic. It was some PC business. They made a software. So one day she just brought a PC to our home. She was given the PC on her work. So she brought it with a bunch of floppy disks. She just told me, here you go, some games for you, play them. There were some very primitive games, I think.
Which ones? Do you remember the first ones? Because I remember the first one I ever saw.
The very first, I think the best of those was Karateka.
Oh, amazing.
I so enjoyed it.
Yes.
It was just like, it had a some kind of story, a basic story. It had fighting. It had some decent graphics.
It was. Actually, I wish my first game was Karateka, because
it wasn't my first game. It was among the first games, the best one. Mm-hmm. There was of course some games like Digger.
Yes.
Digger. Pac-Man.
Yes. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an official PC release of Pac-Man. Could it be like CD Man?
No. Of course, it was some kind of clone or some of the many sequels, mm-hmm. something like this. Some kind of snake game. I still try to find it because there was a game where a mouse is running away from us.
Yes, I know that game.
From a large green snake.
Yes. I know that game. Yeah? I have that game.
Really?
Yes, I do. I'll shoot you an email.
I've been searching for it for about, I don't
That's
know.
One of my first games. I have that. I have that together with, that was some of my first games on my machine, but it was that, Alley Cat, like a bunch of PC booter, like CGA, EGA games.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, actually, you know what? Well, that's how you first came in contact with PC gaming? Is that's the story? Your mom brought the computer home?
Yeah, basically like this, yeah.
I wish that was my story. My story is kind of a bit different. I don't know if I ever told you, but when I was
about... You stole it from someone, I think, yeah?
No, not quite like that. I stole it from someone. That's not my story at all.
Yeah, it was for me.
No.
Some action.
No, the action is, it's actually very nostalgic, and it's probably very, very different. Basically, what happened, that's pre-1990, so... my mom's boyfriend at the time worked in the Science Research University, which for people from not my country is where all the techie stuff happens. That's where they actually reversed. At one point, I remember him bringing home, that's my first ZX Spectrum knockoff. He brought in, they just kept, well, the motherboard in a Spectrum knockoff was just one plate, but they did a portable Spectrum knockoff. They took a portable TV They slapped a keyboard on it, and then they attached a Walkman to the back of it, and it became a portable spectrum unit. It was one, and you didn't have to connect it if it was all like connected together for you. It was hilarious, and I played like I remember playing Fairlight. Like Fairlight really impressed me. This is not about the spectrum.
That's even whatever than stealing.
Yes, it's creative. But that's not the PC thing. My PC thing, one day, she's like, oh, we're going to go to his where he works, to the Scientific Research University, like right down the main street in my town and stuff. So we go in there, and we go in, and we go into like the basement floor. It's all dark, like all the Soviet, you know, like old buildings are.
Oh, yeah.
We go into this, and mind you, I'm very little, so of course you have to scale back everything like 5 times. I'm sure now it's like, oh, this is pretty small, but back then everything looked gigantic to me. So we walk through this door, and there's just like huge mainframes and just leftovers of stuff, just like boards laying around.
Dinosaurs.
It's dark. It's dinosaur. Like it's stuff that's been in this scientific research university since might be probably the 60s.
Yeah, my mother used to work in such university. Yeah,
yes.
She told me those horrors.
It's like it's stuff from the 60s. I don't know, punch cards on the side somewhere, and it's just like and it's all like humming, and it's all dark. It smells like cigarettes and beer, and we just go down this corridor of gigantic humming machinery, and my mom's boyfriend was just like, hey, are you in there? And out from the corner, there's like a green light emitting, and the guy is like, yeah, I'm here. And this huge, fat, bearded guy with glasses sitting in front of a monochrome, like green, you know, green phosphorus monitor, you know, the green ones.
Yeah, of course.
And he's playing arcade volleyball. That's my first. Remember arcade volleyball?
Yeah, of course.
Who does?
I had this one. I think it was also among the first.
Everybody's. I think everybody in like post-Soviet Russia. That's one of their first games.
One of
like,
the popular games.
Like that Alley Cat, that mouse game.
I didn't have Alley Cat.
You didn't have Alley Cat. What's
reason,
wrong
no.
with you? Alley Cat was the best. But these are basically our backgrounds. We come from like stolen corporate computers research university back fucking reverse engineering something. And that was the only platform available. And we all
what
copied
year
games.
Was it?
What year would I play?
Already
United? Was it the 90s?
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. In the 90s, I seen the VGA thing. That's what made me want to become a programmer. Yeah. So this is so that's the state of things in Russia at this point in time. PC is the only gaming platform, basically. But PCs starting to spread everywhere. There are in businesses for no reason other than to. I don't really see.
We have also those small machines stolen from Nintendo called Electronica.
Yes, Game & Watch. They're Game & Watch knockoffs.
They were like the first handheld platforms. One game per one platform.
One company that Electronica that's specialized in basically reverse engineering foreign technology and stealing it and publishing it as a Soviet device, at one point got their hold on Nintendo's Game & Watch and basically rebranded it as theirs, as Electronica handhelds.
Yeah,
and
they
replaced Mickey Mouse.
All the games using our
characters from Soviet cartoons and stuff. So Mickey Mouse became the big bad
so it
wolf
was
and
quite
stuff.
Popular and
very popular.
Parents gave it to their children.
Come on, let's not get derailed. So here's DOS.
Yeah, okay.
So you discover DOS. I discover DOS. All of a sudden, I assume you know. At this point, I can assume the 90s hit. We're in the 90s now. People start having computers in their home. Some by actually purchasing them. Others by stealing them. Others by borrowing them from work. But computers start leaking into home. So, I guess we have to talk about... All right, let's do this. Russian games? Russian games.
We're going to talk strictly about Russian games.
I'd say yes, at this point in time, we probably should, because everybody, see, this is the thing with me, like, I love Twitter, I love everything, everybody knows about the world state of gaming back
yeah,
then.
Yeah,
nobody really knows what we, me and you went through and how, like, we look at it back at nostalgic, I certainly do, like, I have a very strong connection with that time, but I think if the other world looks into it from their perspective, they'll be like, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, we had basically the same popular games that absolutely. Other countries have at that time.
Yes, and our industry was so underdeveloped, and again, no copyright, so people didn't really, even if they did write games, they didn't make any money off them.
Yeah, yeah.
There was that business structure wasn't in place. So,
well, not exactly like this, because I think Perestroika.
Oh, of course. So
Toppler.
So Toppler, aka Perestroika. So Eugene Sotnikov,
yeah.
Who
the legend of.
Legend. There was basically in the early 90s, there was two big game developer companies, and they weren't big, but they were the only two that actually existed.
I wouldn't say two, there were about three.
Okay,
four.
So we
don't
got.
Don't forget.
So we have Eugene. So we got. Oh, that doesn't count. So Eugene Sotnikov and
Doka.
And. Oh, yeah, Doka. But that's later again. So, no, Eugene Sotnikov and Gamos. Nikita Skripkin and Nikita were two of the earliest ones. I don't know which one actually appeared earlier, because I remember seeing Tetriller, as it was called, but it was it's like a Tetris clone with the little dude. High-res EGA, the concept of the game, it's actually pretty fascinating. Like that's.
Yeah, I read about it, but I never experienced it.
You've never seen it? I've seen it when I was a kid.
I know. There was a guy running
basically,
around
for people who don't understand, imagine Tetris, which is, of course, we all know. Do we have to get into Pajitnov and Tetris? Because everybody knows it's the best game ever.
Let's let it go. Official game in Russia.
First game in the Soviet Union. You can read all about its fucking complicated history on the internet, and this is great.
It's very fascinating.
I remember the whole. I actually read the whole like 5-page article in Retro Gamer at one point, and it's like fascinating about Gorbachev calling. Who was the publisher in the U.S. that they wanted to get the rights from Nintendo? I don't know, U.S. Gold, whatever. And he was just like, don't worry about these Japanese, like, they have the thing. Whatever. So that doesn't matter. We all know Tetris. The whole world knows Tetris. The best game ever, Russian game. I'm very proud to be out of the country that probably made the best game ever.
Yeah.
Most genius.
But it didn't make Alexei Pajitnov a millionaire.
No, it didn't. He lives in a small apartment now in the States, and he actually speaks really bad English, even to this day. It's kind of weird. Great guy. Whatever. I actually really like Pandora's Box. Come on, Pandora's Box gotta be one of the best puzzle games out there that nobody knows about.
Oh, yeah, one of the better. It was quite popular, I think.
No, it wasn't. Stop kidding yourself.
Just because
you were friends with somebody in Microsoft doesn't mean Pandora's Box actually sold. It didn't fucking sell.
Okay.
So, no, it's not a commercial success. Even though you can probably still buy it, I think, in Jewel Case somewhere. It had a re-release in the early 2000s. I've seen it in America, like in the 99-cent section. So I guess they're still pushing it out.
Okay, yes. He never repeated the success.
No, but you
Tetris.
Can't. Tetris is genius. So we all know Tetris is genius.
I think he tried to return the rights to Tetris. Or
he did. He
least,
did get the rights. He did
at
get
least,
the rights.
Look for other companies.
No. He got the rights, I think, either in the late 90s or in the early 2000s. So they're now actually paying him.
Oh.
So he's good.
Good for him.
He's good now, but it took him like 20 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's let go of the Tetris. Everybody knows what Tetris is. You've played it on your phone, on your Game Boy, on your fucking, on your Xbox, on your
computer.
We had
also those handheld.
Yes, we did. Don't derail. Don't derail. This is about DOS. So everybody played Tetris on their everything. Like, you can play Tetris on your deck if you fucking really try really hard. So let's let go of the Tetris. We all know the Tetris. So, but that it's called Tet Thriller. There's no H in this, but what they really mean is Tet Thriller. It's like a Tetris thriller game. One of the first Russian games, high-res EGA. The concept is that there's a splash screen that shows the guy. Look it up, please look it up.
You're telling me or?
No, I'm telling the listeners.
Okay.
Somebody is actually going to listen to it. All five of you.
I hope so.
So, the concept is, in the beginning, you see this really cool splash screen. The guy falling asleep with the window open as a Tetris game plays out. And as you play, you have your usual Tetris thing. The spin on the Tetris is that with every move, there's this little guy at the bottom of the screen that walks left and right as the figures keep falling. And he's two squares tall. And he just bounces off surfaces left and right, and he will always climb one step up. And the goal for you is not to play Tetris, but to build a staircase for him to get out of the Tetris glass, because he's stuck in the nightmare. And I always remember this very vividly.
Sounds exciting.
It does. It's a good concept. It's a really tough game to play. It's almost impossible.
Because I saw lots of Tetris clones also in 21st century.
Yes.
They so much sucked. So
they suck. All the Tetris spins really suck. Although I like the Waltris. I kind of enjoy Waltris. But whatever. Tet Thriller was that. And the guy who made this made his own logic game company called Gamos. And there was this other game called Perestroika or Toppler. Even a simpler game, really. Like, I don't even understand how this game ever got famous, except for having, like, a digitized sound and a picture of Gorbachev up front.
Yeah, and national song.
Yes. In the beginning. Remember when you died? Did you ever play the original version?
Yeah, of course.
For PC, I never heard
of Toppler.
When you died, and those little Nikita guys were like cha 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 cha.
Yes,
like I remember that, and I haven't touched this in like 20 years.
It was awesome, and I think it was actually it actually sold.
It did sell, and it was actually became somehow it got distributed. I heard it got distributed. It got so well known because it was spread abroad, like Americans found
they
out
managed
about
to monetize
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 they managed to monetize them. So the guy who made that game established his company Nikita, that mostly specialized in like arcade and weird games. So we had two big companies at that point in the very early in the 90s, so circa 91-92 established, when one of those made logic games, made them and published some other people's logic games as well. Another one, Nikita, that pretty much didn't publish anybody else's work, just did their own, but they were pretty diverse. Which one are we gonna want to talk about? Gamos? Because
I'm not sure I can talk a lot about those.
I guess, but if you lived in Russia in the early 90s, it was unavoidable that you would run into either one of those companies' games.
That's true.
In between Color Lines, which was, I'm pretty sure, on every machine I've ever encountered in every like business and institution I've ever came to, there were like a bunch of American games. You know, which games were installed in every machine, like the American ones? Prince of Persia was everywhere. Was installed in everything.
Yeah,
that's pre-Doom. We're talking pre-Doom era, because when Doom came out, everybody had Doom installed in everything. So yeah,
I did.
So, well, you suck. Prince of Persia, Superplex was on most machines.
Yeah,
as far as I recall. Yes. What else? What else?
Larry.
First Larry was on like every machine ever in the post-Soviet space. I guess it's not really a mystery.
Legendary translation. From two guys, so how many there were?
Technically, there's three.
There was kind of a small company.
Yes.
Small illegal company.
There's a small illegal translating
company.
They
made an exceptional translations.
Exceptional translations. The kind you never see. They are not really translations as much as they are adaptations.
Adaptations.
They
are.
They are geniusly done on a level that we have never seen since. And it's such a shame that nobody will ever put that amount of effort into anything anymore.
Yeah.
But yes, Leisure Suit Larry was one of those translations that was on every machine ever. So it was Prince of Persia, Superplex, Leisure Suit Larry.
I think some Titus games also, yeah?
Yes, Prehistoric.
Including Prehistoric.
So you get this like usual collection of games. It's weird because I think Prince of Persia was on every machine I've ever encountered. Like really, everywhere I went, like I go to games directory on C drive. And by the way, all Russian computers, everybody stuck with Norton Commander. Like only now I realize how not very popular Norton Commander was in the rest of the world. So, and then you had some Russian games that were always there, and Color Lines was one of them.
Yeah, every secretary had it.
I think they still have it on their
probably
computers. Do. They probably
up
do.
Up to this date.
And the second popular gameless logical game would be, I guess, Balda.
Oh, yes, Balda.
Yes. So two of those were installed on every secretary's computer ever. And that was played by everybody. So those are two big Russian games around the time, and they were both logic games. One day I'll probably like look into them and actually maybe do a review, or maybe I'll just do like early gameless games in one episode, because like I think it deserves to be shown to people who didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, they were like Tetris, small, kind of primitive, but very engaging.
Very engaging logical games. Balda is a word game with a very simple concept. And
I think they also released English version, yeah?
They have. Game has released English versions for every single one of their games, including the ones that they published from other people. I think like the Night Cat and the Branch, I think they all actually have English versions.
Oh wow. You remember those games?
I remember everything. That's why I'm das fucking nostalgic.
Yeah.
As far as gamers go, like they had a bunch of logical games. All of them are really good, and all of them are still very playable to this day because they're logic games. They don't need anything.
Yeah, graphics doesn't matter.
No. And then on the other end, we have Nikita, which did... I still haven't found all of their games, I think. I don't think I've played every Nikita game out there from the early 90s, because there's so many, and some of them I don't remember the names of. So it's really... That Santa Claus game is really bothering me, actually. Like, I was trying to find it for years, but I
Santa Claus?
There's a Santa Claus game, and it's actually in English, where it's just, like, you clean out... It's, like, steps. It's, like, Santa Claus's helper. I don't know, something like that. And it has this awesome PC speaker sound, where, like, it's digitized music and sound through the PC speaker. And... all you do is you clean the steps. You're this, the street cleaner, dvornik, who cleans the steps of the Santa Claus's house before he comes out. And there's snow falling from the top. You have to avoid the icicles, and you have to clean them up. And before he comes out, there's a time limit on each level. You have to have the steps completely clean.
So they were less conceptual and more like just... short, entertaining
games. Yeah, but Nikita's games were usually like the graphics of school. Even they did the whole line of educational
Wheel
games.
Wheel of
at
Fortune,
one
point.
Yeah? Oh, no, they didn't do that. I don't think so.
No.
Did they? I didn't actually. I've never looked for this. Is this Nikita? Is that a Nikita Skripkin game?
Yeah, I was always sure it's Nikita.
That's too late for them.
Why?
And that game. I remember Yakubovich advertising it on the TV, where he was holding out the floppy. And by that point, Nikita was already a big company, and they didn't make, like, Nikita always, like, see, gamers games were always done in, high-res EGA. Nikita went with the 256 color VGA as soon as they could. Like, remember their educational games? Their educational games were cool. Birthday, the first one, with the bear. They were playing that one?
Yeah.
That was an awesome...
I remember that. I think it was kind of a Humongous clone, no?
Yes, it was, but at the same time, it was their own thing. like it was like the different vocabulary. You can select different languages, like in English and in German and stuff. And it looked really good, and it played actually pretty well for a kids game. And then they had a whole bunch of those educational games where, like, I remember seeing that one of them in school with like a. It was like
For some reason, we had a long line of educational games in
at
Russia
the time
from the very start.
Where business wasn't really developed, right? Yeah. Like, did they even sell a lot of it? Like, I was like, when I saw it in school, I was like, did they actually buy this? Like, now that I think about it back, I was like, did they buy it or did they just really steal it? Like, it was always unknown to me. But whatever, those games were very cool, and Nikita made... Do you ever actually play... you've never played, you told me, Toppler 2? The Siege of the White House?
No, I missed that.
I have played it. What was made it awesome, it's a shit game, but what made it awesome is the amazing like 3D Nikita intro. What they had is they had Glinka's anthem, you know, the first Russian anthem. You know, dun 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 dun. It's like a three, and it was like a 3D font, Nikita just like rotating on the screen, and then they had the Nikita logo. You know, the Toppler, the original Toppler, the Nikita logo. You know, the guy. The
yep.
It as the music progressed, it walked on top of the 3D. Letters that said Nikita, you know, like dun 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 dun.
It's like it was a great time when people just used everything.
That's right. No every, need to pay for rights or anything.
Everything they find out.
Yes.
They tried to put it in good use, but usually it failed.
It did fail miserably.
But in the late 90s, Nikita. Really made some pretty good 3D games.
Did it?
Yeah, Adventures.
Ah, yeah, I guess.
It's like about a bee who was, that was flying awesome. Around the
well,
house.
Sixth.
Had 3D glasses included.
Six dimension, which I do own to this day. I have the CD. Oh no, I don't. I gave it to my old girlfriend back in fucking 2002. Okay, no, I don't own that, but six dimension.
So they tried some technologies.
Six dimension actually sucks. The sequel is really good.
Yeah.
But the first one blows. Whatever. So this is that. That's us at the early 90s. So basically, logic games, educational games, and a bunch of like arcade games that nobody cares about in the early 90s. And I think it was actually Gamos that published Sobor. Do you remember Sobor?
Sobor.
By the two guys who went on to do Bermuda Syndrome.
Oh, yes, of course.
That was like a fighting...
Igor Selivanov.
Yes. What was their artist's name? I forget what their name
was. Alexei Danilkina.
How do you know their names? I just know them like as two guys who made Bermuda Syndrome.
Oh, you know, it's our past... And I'm using mobile
they
games.
They only made like three games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically their first game was this weird game. I don't even know how they got the concept of it. Do you remember Sobor? It's like the game where like ancient Russia where you like train one of your fighters and you learn...
For a fighting game, yeah.
It's a fighting game. And then once you...
1991. It's even before...
And when you learn the moves on this one fight-to-fight screen, then you have the crowd-on-crowd fighting.
Yeah. It's like our national entertainment from ancient Russia, yeah. Fighting.
Yes, the crowd-on-crowd fighting. Yeah. The crowd-on-crowd drunken
usually,
fighting.
Usually happened in winter.
Yes.
Some fun.
So, yeah, they published that as well, I think, and they published all those other games, but whatever. So, yeah, Russian gaming never really moved anywhere until the mid-90s because we didn't have the industry, because everything was so freely copied. We copied American games, we copied all the other rest of the world games. There was no, I guess, money being made mentality in gaming.
Well, I wouldn't say we copied everything, because there were some original ideas floating around.
Oh no, and, of course, no. But I mean, we physically copied games. Like, there was no money in them.
Yes, piracy. That's right. Piracy is popular in Russia.
Absolutely.
So it's not such a big progress.
No, not at all. But the thing is, companies that made those games, like, I didn't even know, like I guess because gamers existed for so long, they made money from their logic games, but as far as I knew, everybody just copied them, just the same way as they did with all the foreign games. So, like, I don't really understand how companies made money in the early 90s. But then, once we hit about the mid-90s period, that's when those big companies start forming, and all the former big pirate companies start transforming into legal companies.
I think it was later.
A bit later, but like in the mid-90s you had bigger projects. Basically, 96, 97 is when those big things started coming out. Sort of more than logical games, more than just simple arcade games.
Let's talk a bit about Mir Dialog.
That was mid-90s. That's like 95, 96, 97.
No. They started in the early 90s. They were...
What did they do? In the early
they were just a bunch of guys completely out of gaming business.
Obviously, that's how everything started.
They gathered people, engineers and someone. They taught them. They just sent them to America or somewhere else. So they taught how to make games.
Yeah.
And they started outsourcing.
Yeah.
They outsourced... plenty of games.
Yeah, but
plenty
that,
of popular games, including Warcraft Adventures.
Yeah, no. That's not Mir Dialog.
That's the same people. Yeah.
The same people, but yeah, it's Animation Magic. But it doesn't really count. I'm sorry to be from the same country that Animation Magic comes from. It's a very complicated history that company has. Of course, most people will know him in the worldwide gaming world for that CDI Zelda game,
some very important people in Russian gaming industry started there.
Absolutely, they didn't know how to do anything, and they sent them all to learn how to do animation.
Sergei Arlovsky.
Is he from? Yeah. He's from Animation Magic.
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
Not Animation Magic. Mir Dialog.
But whatever, the thing is, Animation Magic is different because they didn't target the Russian market. They targeted the foreign market. They just were the outsourcing company. That's different. Like, I've never played Animation Magic games until later. Like, in the PC world, in the DOS world, they're mostly famous for I Am Me, an educational game, which is just as bad as the fucking Zelda game for CDI, if not worse. That animation is so it's hilarious. I mean, it's fine, like, not no disrespect to people who made it, but the game is horrible, and it's horrible so much that it becomes hilarious, which I guess is a good thing. So yeah, whatever, we're not talking about this. Like, when I was a kid and I played Russian games, I played Gamos games, I played fucking Nikita games, and I played this. Oh, Jesus, I'm choking over here. All those emotions. The Crow game, Verona. I still don't know who made that.
Which one?
Verona, или как Иван Дурак за кладом ходил.
Oh yeah.
The Crow, I will make a review of one of those days. It's a huge part of my childhood. That was an amazing game.
I never got into it.
What? Except for controls. The controls in that game were probably some of the worst I've ever encountered in my life.
Exactly.
Other than that, it was technically pretty awesome. Like, I never understood how it got made, and of course it went nowhere because people just copied it. That company that made it, I guess, never went anywhere. Probably just got bust. But
the art was pretty good there.
The art was good. The sound was really good. The PC speaker music and stuff, and the whole concept was all right. And even the three, and it was like a multi level game. Like, every level was different. It was like a fighting game, a racing game, a puzzle game.
Mix of genres. Just,
yeah, it's a mixed genre game, like a mini game.
And it was like used to national themes.
Absolutely,
from
the fairy tales,
the
old Russian fairy tales. It mixed the themes really, really well. The only problem with the game is that the controls were absolute garbage.
Yeah,
like you couldn't control anything for shit, and
that really mattered for me.
It really mattered, but back in those times, it really didn't matter. I think it was actually released around, was it the 92? I think it's the stamp on it.
No, it's very old. It's
yes.
One of the worst.
And it's an amazing game, but that was, except for that, and until the 90s, until the mid-90s, to me, those were the only games. The Logic games, the shitty arcade Nikita games, and that one game that, you know, that one game. And then we started having slightly bigger projects.
But still there were some other quite good games, like by Doka.
Which one?
Small, cute arcade games.
What, like Mick?
Tunguska.
Tunguska didn't come out till 98, my friend.
No, wait a minute.
And that's from the same two guys who made fucking Bermuda Syndrome.
From the same developer. How was it called?
Bermuda Syndrome. They only made three games, man. They only made Subwar, Bermuda Syndrome, and Tunguska, as far as I know.
Yeah. So Tunguska, it was
Tunguska 95. Was for Windows. No, it wasn't. Tunguska was in 98. It was originally called
98.
Remember reading the Game EXE magazine in 1997 when the game wasn't even finished yet and it was still called the Tunguska Syndrome at that point.
Oh God.
So that's in the same issue. I think it was August of 1997, and you can probably pull this up. It's in the same issue that talks about, that has an interview with the creators of The Spot. Yes.
Yeah.
That's how well I remember things that happened.
Oh, but come on, Bermuda Syndrome. It came out in 95, yeah.
95, yes. Good game, not for DOS. Let's move on. An awesome flashback, Russian flashback clone, which was pretty good and it's still fun to play to this day. If you can run it,
I recommend it's flashback with dinosaurs.
With dinosaurs, it's flashback with dinosaurs. Go play it. It's awesome.
Yeah. Support Russia.
Ignore like 50 people that are in the credits. That game is made by two people.
You sure?
Yes, I do. I read the interview too. Except for the cutscenes, which were made in Germany, but they're really not important. They're like 5 seconds each. So yes, that game is made by the same two people who made Sobor. And everything else. If you're listening to this and you want some flashbacky action, go get yourself Bermuda Syndrome. It's pretty fucking good. The controls are exactly the same as Flashback. It looks like Flashback. It just has dinosaurs, and it's not as frustratingly hard as Flashback gets in the middle.
And just have some girl, yeah.
What?
Some pretty girl.
Yeah, there's some tits in the cutscene. Yep. 3D CGI tits from mid-90s, if you're into that sort of thing, which, come on. Okay, so, yes, there was that. But before that, so, DOS games in Midrush, take this over, because you were probably the one more familiar with all the bigger games in the 90s, aren't you? Besides Sea Legends. Of course there's Sea Legends. You want to just
Sea Legends.
Skip
oh my
sea
god.
Legends?
What a game. I remember I went to the store. We had this very small chain of stores called Soyuz where you could buy a legal copy of a legal game in a box just like everywhere else.
The big boys.
So yeah, I was into adventure games at the time, but for some reason I asked my mom to buy Sea Legends because it looked like an adventure game, and it was basically a pirate clone, very step by step, but it had voxel graphics. It was it had 3D sea battles. It had a story. It had a beautiful, amazing 2D graphics. Basically, everything about it is amazing. It's a 1996 game. So for a Russian company in 1996, it was an amazing game. It is an amazing game on its own. It's very entertaining. Yes. So I can talk about it all day and night.
I know you can. Let me put my two cents into this, the whole Sea Legends thing. Sea Legends thing. Okay. So I know. Did you say basically Sea Legends is pirates? Sid Meier's Pirates.
Yep.
Very much so, almost to the T. Except the biggest thing that it has going for it is the sea battles are play out in a 3D voxel thing, which looks great. Like, that's one thing that game has going for it. Like, they're really up the thing. Then it also has the overall plot going. Like, you can actually play through the storyline. Also in addition on Sid Meier's Pirates. The rest is just like Sid Meier's Pirates, except for there's like animated cutscenes in there, which actually look really, really amateurish. Like, that's my thing with it. Like, the art in that game is not done by professionals. However, the programming is so damn good. Like, the voxel battles, it is really like I've played Sid Meier's Pirates.
Nobody
when I was
used
a kid.
The technology at that time.
No, nobody did. Not for the sea, anyway. Yeah. And you like
it was endless.
Perfect.
You could
sense.
You could sail for hours and hours.
Oh yes, it was like, that's the thing. It's Sid Meier's Pirates with high res graphics, which are not very good. They're like hand painted, scanned in, and they're
kind of.
They're wonky, like, they're fine, they do the job, but like worldwide standards, they're really not that good. But the sea battles are breathtaking. Like, yeah. They're so good, it's amazing. And I don't know why you love this game this much, because it's basically a clone of some other game with voxel graphics on top of it. Like, to me, that really, because at this point in time, I've already played Sid Meier's Pirates when I was a kid. I love that game.
I didn't play Sid Meier's, so
and
it
then
was part
I
of childhood.
Also had fucking Pirates Gold, which is also pretty good. I don't care what you say about it. Pirates Gold is my favorite version of Pirates. Maybe not as advanced as it should have been for 1994, but it's like on every platform. Like, I remember my friend had it for like Genesis and Mega Drive, wherever you come from. But like, by the time Sea Legends rolled around, I've played this game so many times I didn't even care anymore. And the only thing Sea Legends really had for it is like those amazing voxel sea battles.
The funny thing that this genre of sea sailing in the sea, this pirates genre became quite popular in Russia.
That's
so,
right. We knocked off it like five more times.
Yeah, and one company that used to be one of the major pirates in early 90s, it started a legal business, and it made like four or five games
with pirates knockoff, the Corsairs, except for the third one, which take I don't know what the publisher it was, which was in America. You can buy that game, well, actually you can buy at least three of them in America. I forget what they're called, but
there are some sequels and some add-ons.
Yes, but the biggest one you can buy, that was the third game in the Pirates knockoff series in the modern times. The Corsair series was Pirates of the Caribbean game. If you buy Pirates of the Caribbean game, the original Pirates of the Caribbean game, in the European or the United States release, what you're getting is the Russian Sid Meier's Pirates knockoff.
Yeah.
Kind of ironic, but oh well. At least they did it. Yeah, in Russia, the game was
Sea Legends that started
Sea
it
Legends
all was
is,
very good.
Yes. It
very good.
I can't. It's a really good game, but I can't have as much of an attachment to it as you can, just because, you know, I've played Pirates before. I know what Pirates are. Like, voxels, awesome. That.
Yeah, you know, just small details like crew crying out like Parusa.
Yes. Yes.
Some small, tiny details.
And then once we had the copyright established and the big pirate companies become major, you know, publishers all of a sudden, you have all this other money flowing in. And we had a bunch of other good games in the mid-90s, which, well, that's mostly me.
Russian games?
Yeah, I mean Russian games. I mean, some of them were good. Most of them weren't really good. But, I mean, for DOS. Because at this point, DOS was dying out. I mean, you take 96, 97, and we still publish games for DOS, surprisingly, where most of the world already moved on to Windows 95
some
stuff.
Some very, very bad Sierra clones. Some adventures like Ivan Loshkin.
Ivan Loshkin, you can see my sad playthrough of it on YouTube. All 50 minutes. If you
can sit through it.
If you can sit through it, because I don't even know what to talk about during playing it. Like, I'm at loss for words during the playthrough, because
it's very bad.
It's bad. Most of it is just like me going, because I just don't know what to fucking say anymore. Like, it's bad. Some people even, like, actually on the Russian Facebook knockoff, the fucking Vkontakte, like, I've seen that video posted and people being like, what the fuck does he know and shit? It's like, no, I know stuff, alright? That game, don't fucking look at it through rose-colored glasses and shit. It's not all about nostalgia. That game is bad. Like, you know what? I recognize the effort. I will always recognize the effort. You know, they wanted to. They tried. They really tried.
Well, the idea to make a clone of Space Quest.
Yes, Russian Space Quest is what the idea always was. And I guess it was achieved. I mean, they did make a Russian Space Quest. The point of it was not a very good game. And everything is kind of good about it. I mean, the graphics are good. The music is cool. Everything's kind of okay. The thing is, as an adventure game, the puzzles are shit. Like, the puzzles are so shit. Like, like, the puzzles are fucking abysmal. Like, the butterfly.
Really funny.
No, it was not very funny. The jokes are shit. The puzzles are shit. And to me, it's like, okay, graphics are okay. Sound is okay. Everything else is okay. It's programmed in fucking Turbo Pascal. Just for the effort, they should earn a fucking medal for putting this together in Turbo Pascal. But, wow. Like, the butterfly puzzle is really what did me in. And it comes early on in the game. If you haven't seen my playthrough, you have to find an axe in the game. And the way you find it is on only one screen, there is like a butterfly in the forest. And when you try to catch it repeatedly, you try to catch it, you go for it, you miss it,
you
fall down, you fall behind the stump, and you accidentally find an axe. Anything after this point is just like useless. Like, there's even more, and then there's a timed puzzle at the end of it. That's the reason I cut out 20 minutes out of that video, because I couldn't make the last puzzle on time. Yes, you've thought Sierra Games fucking treated you unfairly and killed you. That is like a new
low. Another Sierra clone. Tsarevna.
Oh yeah, don't even bring that one up. Tsarevna.
Oh, come on, it was
a Windows
the first
version.
Russian adventure ever.
Was it the first Russian adventure ever?
Of course, it was 1992. The first version, yeah.
Early
then it disappeared, then appeared in 1994, then disappeared, and
appeared
again
like 98,
99. In
2000s. As a Windows version, shareware Windows version.
Yep, and it was sold in Russian shops.
I can't.
You could buy this shit.
It's terrible. We had the pretty good, it was very cheap. We had the Dolka released a pretty good, the Resistance, Protivostoyanie strategy game, which actually was pretty good, except for, you know, it was cheap, but it was a good
DOS. It was DOS?
Yes, it was for DOS. So the same thing with Clash, which actually came out in 1998, Схватка, by Buka, but that was a Polish game that they rebranded, which was also pretty good. And then, of course, Doka had those things like, I still have my CD for Total Control, which is sort of like a Master of Orion knockoff, in a way. I have that on the CD still. And, of course, the first Russian CD game, Russian Roulette.
Russian Roulette, yeah.
I had
that's
that
a legendary
CD.
Game.
But the first one.
Everyone played it.
Yeah, it was shit.
Yes.
However, did you ever play the sequel? I have the sequel on the CD. It's one of the best. It was one of the best Russian games ever that nobody bought. I love the second game. You don't know. You don't understand how much I love the second game. Second game is amazing. The
Never
first,
played it, but,
I have that on CD. I had the first one, but I exchanged it for like a Resident Evil collection at one point in my life or something or other. But the first Russian Roulette was this shitty fucking Terminal Velocity Descent clone set in Russia where you fight aliens, and its selling point, like, it was stamped on the red CD. That was its biggest thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The plastic the CD was made out of was red, I guess, patriotic or whatever. That game was shit. It wasn't very good. But
I never cared for this, so...
Dude, the second one is amazing. Do you like the second one?
No, I skipped it completely.
Why did you never played the second Russian Roulette?
No.
That game is awesome.
Well, now that you say...
Like, I like it a lot. It has its shortcomings, but it's so massive for, like, a Russian game. Like, it's epic in scope. Like, every level has different art, different graphics, different vehicles, different everything. And it's like, it's sort of like that Atari or Amiga game Hunter, where you can go wherever you want. And it was so...
Yeah, it's considered a cult game in Russia.
Second one?
The first one and the second one. Yeah.
First one, whatever. First one was a bullshit game. I don't know, cult or no cult, fuck that game. First one is a bullshit game. It's not fun, whatever. Second one, like, it pioneers so much. You can literally, like, go anywhere you want, board any vehicle you want, finish the missions in any way you want. It's an open world game.
Wow.
But the thing with it
is... It's a Windows game.
No, it's a Windows game.
Come on.
I know, I'm fucking going off into it because I love that game so much. But the thing is, it also has like 6 different worlds, and for each one of them, it's different art, different vehicles, different time period. One of them is like Napoleon times, one of them is like colonial times, one of them is the future, and it's different vehicles, different missions, and you're free.
Yeah, the screenshots are pretty good.
It's a cool game that nobody ever played, but whatever. So let's go back to Russia.
Like a bunch of other games.
Yeah.
Russia, that came in that period.
So this podcast is fucking all over the place. Whatever. I don't give a fuck. I never expected this to be all like, anywhere in one place, because we're just covering this. Like, I just wanted to give a background and then talk about Russian games. So, also mid-90s, Mad Space.
Okay.
Can we go without going Mad Space? Mad Space was this game where it has like a rebel assault shooter up front, which blows. And you can also, it came with 3D glasses. You can.
It was one of those few games made by the company that made Gek, yeah? Am I right?
Yes. Auric Vision published it.
Published
this amazing Russian adventure game called Gag, which you can read up on or maybe even find somewhere if you're very rich or very determined.
You should definitely try to find it, because it's still looks and plays good. It's very funny.
It's a fine game. You can read the article for PC Gamer Crapshoot that Richard Cobbett wrote. Whatever. It's a fine
Hold
game.
Hold me.
Yes, it's okay. Don't hit him. Don't get violent. So they published this game called Mad Space. It was the 3D shooter with really weird graphics, and its main selling point was non-Euclidean space, which works really well in this game until they start using it a lot and it starts just getting really, really confusing. If you don't know what non-Euclidean geometry is, do a Google search for it. something, because it's a unique idea in a first-person shooter, and it just, you know, it has its... Mad Space has its advantages. Mostly it's just annoying. And another 3D shooter that came out around the same time was, of course, ZAR, Zone of Artificial Intelligence, which was published in foreign territories that you can still find.
It was also DOS.
It was also made for DOS, although...
Because Gecko is a Windows game.
Yes, but also... actually, ZAR exists for, like, every... There's a DOS version. There's a Windows software renderer. There's a Windows Direct3D renderer. There's a Windows OpenGL version. I have all of them, actually, because I also have the mission pack. I own physically the mission pack. I bought it in 1999.
You're cool.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. It's like a voxel 3D shooter, which is actually really, really cool, but really, really boring at the same time.
You were going to make a review.
I was, until I got really, really bored with it. it's this really, really cool concept. It's just really, really tedious. It's a voxel 3D shooter that looks amazing. It's amazing to look at. And the multiplayer was very popular in Russia, from what I gather. It's what it says everywhere. Like, the multiplayer was as popular as Quake. Every article you read on ZAR, they're like, the multiplayer in ZAR...
It was just popular in every country.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I've never met a single fucking person who played ZAR on fucking line. I don't know where
I didn't mean ZAR, just multiplayer.
Yes, multiplayer was popular, because but they're like...
Those famous Russian clubs.
Yes, of course. Well, there's
that. Where you can play multiplayer.
The LAN clubs. Yeah, that's another thing that, like, in the early 2000s, you can... there's this establishment, there were just like LAN party clubs that you could go. I used to cut school for those all the time.
I only played Counter-Strike.
Counter-Strike. Everybody played Counter-Strike. The original beta. Whatever. Let's not get derailed. So, Russian games in the 90s. I talked about I talked about ZAR. I talked about Mad Space. All that fucking... We talked about Sea Legends. What else?
Something we forgot. Something very big.
Something very big?
Yep.
Really?
Sure, we have a lot of titles.
But for DOS, though?
Yeah, for DOS.
Really? What's like Dungeons of the Kremlin?
Oh, no.
I played that game all the way through, by the way.
Dungeons of the Kremlin. It's like a dungeon game?
It's a Wolfenstein clone, but with like more weird graphics, and it's all...
Oh,
about,
yeah, I was yeah, going yeah. to mention...
It's like Smuda. Smuda is a sequel to... AKA Raising Dead for foreign people. That horrible, horrible game, Raising Dead, is actually a sequel to another game.
You mentioned Euclidean physics, and I remembered the game, an official sequel to Prince of Persia 4D, I think it was called. It was made by some Russian programmer. He also used this method in some levels, I think.
Yes, most certainly. And it came with level editor.
Yeah, and pretty popular, yeah? Well, not popular, but it was quite popular.
It doesn't count. It's like a reverse engineered Prince of Persia 2. It's stolen.
If you didn't get enough of Prince of Persia, you could play that one.
Yes. What else, though?
Along with Doom 2D.
Oh, Doom 2D. I played the shit out of that game. The music is hilarious. The multiplayer is so much fun. Yeah, Doom 2D was basically a 2D Doom game. That's all there was. There's not much thought to it. Cool music. That's
it. Well, it turned from an FPS to an
arcade. It's a platformer. They turned the thing in the platform, but used old Doom's graphics. Made their own music, made their own levels, obviously, and you can play it at split-screen multiplayer with old-ass keyboards that didn't understand more than, like, 8 key presses at the same time. It was so annoying. Yep. The keyboard would just start beeping all the time when you start switching weapons and aiming up and down and whatnot. Also, had a pretty cool setup program. When you set up your sound card parameters, you can select check, and it would be like, Doomer! Can you hear me? It was a choice of, like, do you hear the sound? Yes or no? All that stuff. That's like a freeware thing, though. Anything still, else? Anything
like history?
Anything big?
Probably missing something, but
yeah,
as
right?
I'm not ready for this talk, so
who cares?
I can't remember some big names.
Yeah, this is so weird. Like, I feel like I'm missing something because basically we have nothing from like 93 to 96.
Yeah,
there has to be something coming out there that's not for Windows.
Well, they discovered Windows in 96, 97.
Yeah, but that's when most of the thing that, you know, like most of the adventure games that started coming out at the time from Russia, that's when the huge like
adventure. Oh, talking about adventure games.
Oh no, please.
Amber.
Amber. Oh yes, that was for DOS.
Yes, that
Nine Princes of Amber that came out. It came out what, 98? That's too late.
No, 99? 96.
Princes of Amber came out in 96? I don't think
96, so. 97, something like
this. I really don't think so. Whatever. It was the Russian adventure game.
Well, yeah, still it was based on Knights and Princes of Amber, but it was illegally...
Nine Princes of Amber was based on Robert Zelazny's series of, you know, Amber Kingdom books without any kind of licensing or anything whatsoever.
They planned to make it into a long
running series,
long chain of series. Yeah,
that cool box with a stamp, with a rubber stamp on it. Shit game, yeah. Really shit game.
It was like those interactive movies where you have to hit the key.
Yes, it was one. Was like, where do I like the guy nurse comes in, he's about to tackle me, so I now have only this one series of decisions to make that you have to figure out the sequence. It's like the last chapter of Phantasmagoria. Yeah. If you can't fight off a guy, if you use a different item, which probably, like, you can still stab him with a screwdriver. It doesn't have to be a piece of glass. But you stab him with a screwdriver, you lose. If you stab him with a piece of glass, you fucking progress. It's that.
There were some puzzles, like chess puzzle or something like
yes,
this.
Yes, the chess puzzle is fucking pathetic.
A lot of puzzles.
There was that. Can we not talk about this game? Because I don't really.
No. It was an important game for this company,
I guess,
Saturn.
Yes.
Because
they
released
afterwards.
It in just a year, they died because there was a crisis in Russia and a lot of companies, good companies, died at that time, and then it was reborn in a couple of years, and it started making lots and lots and lots of Russian adventure games. You just can't imagine how many shitty adventure games they made in just
I know you had to imagine
long?
Because
8-10 years,
because you had to review them all, you
yes,
poor fucker.
I reviewed most of them, and it was like an endless nightmare.
Yes.
Because they kept making them one after another.
I feel so sorry for you.
They were really talentless people.
Yes.
They just found out how to sell a lot of games to people who didn't give a shit about adventure games.
It's true. Besides that,
sad times.
Is there anything else we have forgotten? It was for DOS that I guess now everybody understands this is what was our one and only platform besides consoles, and consoles were only Nintendo knockoffs and then some imports like Sega Genesis, Mega Drive, where I come, you know, came in, all that sort of stuff, not really Super Nintendo because those were official and they were really expensive, so nobody bought it. So yeah, PC.
Yeah, but we had Japanese imported
yes we did, but nobody bought
clones
it.
And Dendy.
Yes, yeah. Well, they're not Japanese, they're Taiwanese.
What?
That company, you should watch that. There's this documentary called The Curse of the Gray Elephant that the Russian guy made. That's all about that.
Oh.
Look it up, YouTube it. It's fun.
But it was very popular. It was.
Yes.
We even had a TV program.
A TV program, it also, yes.
Dendy
New Reality.
Yeah.
But whatever. Besides that, PC was the only gaming platform. It was a platform so open that nobody made money off it, I guess. Really, it was all about copying shit. So, that's how I came to, like, people always like, oh, how do you play all those Russian games? Like, I didn't have anything else to play with. And, like, in the early 90s was the time where just like, let me just play. I've seen a game somewhere. Somebody copied a new game. I don't care what it was. It could have been fucking Frontier Elite 2 or fucking Warcraft or Doom or, like, it was, like, or Dune or, like, something like on the... there were all genres. I just ate it all up just because I was like, this is amazing. So that's where I come from. People always ask me about... Don't ask me about this anymore. This was one and only gaming platform in the country where I come from. So not surprisingly, I've tried to play as many games on the one and only platform available as possible. So that's...
Well, maybe too many because...
What?
Up till these days... not many can compete with you.
A bunch. I feel like a bunch of people can compete with me. Especially people who do the collecting now as opposed to back then. Like, I don't have enough on people who, like, I just go on my good memories of things. People who, like, go, like Lazy Game, you know, Clint from Lazy Game Reviews and stuff, he just constantly buys all those games and stuff. And, you know, he'll eventually probably outdo me thus games wise. But you know, like I had my times. Like I played all kinds of shitty games. Like even recently, like I was replaying the fucking for the 1992 video. I started up Lure of the Temptress again, and okay. That game is not good.
No.
The concept is maybe interesting.
It wasn't that new as they proclaimed.
That game, like, sucks. It's just not fun to play.
Yeah, it's short and it's boring.
Yeah, so
I remember.
That's the thing. Like, so many, like, I was actually for the 1992 game video, like, I've played so many games which I was like, oh my god, I would never ever play that fucking game ever again in my life. Except for, but back then, it was so new and it was so interesting. I just tried to, like, play everything. Like, I was into every genre, like, except for maybe racing games. But back then, they weren't as complex and as shitty. But, like,
no, it was a bit different for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I felt in love with adventure games too early.
Of course.
So I just ignored a lot of good and bad games from
again,
other genres.
For me, it's different. I fell with in love with adventure games, I guess, early in time. But at that point, I was also into all those other genres. So I always sort of compensated by different games. But, like, I remember, because I didn't discover adventure games till, you know, Goblins 2 and Leisure Suit Larry 1, you know, the VGA one, which is
Legend
pretty late.
Yeah,
so, but, like, at that point, I played a shit ton of those, like, tried to play as many CR adventure games as possible, but, yeah, I never really sort of, like, replaced...
I remember when I first mm-hmm. met you on some forum,
yes.
adventure forum, you were counting all the games you had played. Like, I played 273
games. I wanted to get over 400 at that point, which I couldn't, because all that happened, the reason why that happened is I read an interview with Randy Slugansky, rest in peace, and he was like, I played over 400 adventure games, and I was like, I wonder if I have. And I started counting, I made a text file, and I just started writing all that stuff down. And no,
but it was really funny.
It was also very funny, but I also didn't count at this point. Like, I was a purist, so I was like, Little Big Adventure and Alone in the Dark aren't really adventure games. They're like action adventure games. So they wouldn't go on that list. They wouldn't. I still went up to like 300 just on like pure adventure games alone, but which I consider pure. But whatever, it was fucking stupid.
It was an oddish.
But I always, like, ever since I was a kid, I always tried to play as many PC games as popular. As possible, which is why I'm like, people, like, now that people like approach me and like, how do you know all these games? It's like, it was like a point in my life where just like, I'm just gonna play everything. And it wasn't that hard because I didn't have many platforms to choose with. And guess what? Another thing that I didn't have, games didn't cost $50 for me. Games were fucking free. I could find it, if somebody had it, I could copy it. So, that's my background in MS-DOS, and I guess yours is as well, right? even though we come from different financial backgrounds, we're from different sort of...
No, it didn't matter. We lived in the same Russia.
That's right. We still lived in the same Russia.
Through a revolution, and nobody cared about anything.
That's right.
About
nobody,
any rights.
We lived through that time where there was no rights enough, which allowed both of us to play all those all those piles of games for free. Where the only hardship, like, at the same time, of course it adds its own, like, we didn't have this thing where you could go to the store and, like, see some long forgotten game and be like, I'm gonna pick that one, and it was like a hidden gem or something. That never happened, obviously. What happened is, you just go to your friend and you copy, you fucking come in with like 20 stack of floppies and you just copy everything he has.
I think the first game I, no, not me, my mother ever bought me was Pilot Brothers, that came out in
really
97
because I still have that your computer issue with ads for all of it and all the Doka games as well.
Yeah, it was a very popular game. It was some of the most popular Russian games in Russia, of course,
in the mid-90s, of course.
Yes,
it's sad.
So they managed to sell it, but it was a Windows game.
Oh yeah, it was. So do you have anything to add to this?
Well, I think we looked at most of the companies and titles.
I actually don't think that, judging by our discussion, I don't think anybody who's not from Russia will be able to understand what we're talking about. But you know what? I don't give a shit. This is what all nostalgia is about. I am DOS nostalgic. I'm fucking talked about all these games for years, and this is something I really can't discuss on Twitter or anywhere else because people who grew up around the same time as I have don't really have that. So I guess this is what was important to me. So don't ever fucking ask me how I know all about these games. I just told you. Don't really ask me about Russian games. So we obviously came to the conclusion that we're all pretty shitty. We just liked them because they were nostalgic, except for those logic games. But logic games are timeless. So that doesn't really count. Like, why is Tetris fucking timeless? Because in the essence, it's a logic arcade game. And the concept is so simple, and anybody can get into it. So there's that. Those are Russian games and stuff. Everything else from the 90s, Tsar, fucking Tsarevna, Ivan Loshkin, like fucking anything else that came out in the mid-90s Russia, everything has been long forgotten in Russia, and the rest of the world didn't even know about this.
So, that's true.
Exactly. So
they're just lost in time.
They're lost in time.
Nobody cares.
We like some of them. I have nostalgic connection. You know, like, I like to fire up. Tsar is fun. It's fun for about 20 minutes at a time. All those other adventure games can, you know, the enjoyment can be found, unless it's Tsarevna, of course, which then, you know, if you enjoy that game, I don't know what's wrong with you. this is it. That's MS-DOS. I can't believe we covered the whole thing. Like, really? Like, I can't really think of anything else we haven't talked about. This is weird, because I thought there was much more. I was like, we must go on for like hours and hours before we ever hit on the complexities of...
Well, I could talk a lot of hours about Windows Russian games.
Oh no, that doesn't count.
Russian adventure games.
Well, yeah, but I know you can.
We'll be ranting. Just
mostly ranting. Lots of angry stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess this is it for this one.
Yeah.
I
guess so.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, you can find if you listen to this and you don't follow Mr. Igor Artomov on Twitter at @AVETORY on Twitter. Yes. That is such a weird fucking thing. Please follow him for honest video game rants, vegetarian bullshit, and all the weird Russian political stuff that you probably don't care about. That's where you find him, and probably one and only place online where anybody can follow you at this point in time.
That's it.
That's it. So follow him on Twitter. There's a good chance if you are listening to this that you already know where to find me, but just in case that you don't, and you just stumbled across this blindly, and you listen to the whole hour 20 of this without knowing who we are, I am Anatoly Shashkin of DOS Nostalgia, and you can find me at DOSNostalgia.com, or you can find my YouTube account, which is pretty much the same as what you see on the website, DOS Nostalgic on YouTube, or follow me on Twitter at DOS Nostalgic. Also join the official DOS Nostalgia Facebook group at facebook.com/DOS Nostalgia. It's all DOS Nostalgia. You know where to find me. You know why you're listening to this. Hopefully this has been at least informative, or maybe interesting, or kind of funny in a non-pathetic way. This is me. I'm signing off. And my good friend, Mr. Igor Artemov, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe, are you into this? Would you want to do this again on like a different topic? Maybe that's not as personal, or just something or other?
Sure, why not?
Yes.
And there's always Sea Legends.
There's always Sea Legends that he can just do on his own for like 5 hours straight. That'll be just a Sea Legends episode, which we might do one day if I'm really, really bored.
I hope so.
So far, I hope you enjoy this podcast. Hopefully the quality will come out fine, like the levels, the audio levels of recording, and there's like all kinds of noises around me. There's sick people, people bitching about shit, people fucking walking in and out, people taking a shower. Hopefully you won't hear any of this. And most importantly, contact me on Twitter if you have a topic that you think is worth discussing on an MS-DOS Gaming Center podcast, or maybe if you want to participate in one, if you have the passion and if you can talk and all of that stuff, if you feel like you can discuss a topic or two in about an hour, I would like to hear from you. Please, you know, leave
join
a message
us.
On Twitter. Join us, of course. Well, sir, this has been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for the nice talk.
All right. And maybe you'll hear again from Mr. Igor Artemov on one of the DOS Nostalgia podcasts, hopefully.
Okay, that's a bit too long saying goodbye.
I don't care. It's a podcast. It's my podcast. Who gives a shit? If you don't like it, they probably shut it off like half hour ago. When we're all,
fair enough.
Exactly. So this is the beauty of the internet. So contact me, follow us. Don't give up on your passion for retro gaming, please.
Play those games.
Yeah. Play those games. Play those games that we mentioned.
Even though they look like shit.
Fuck you. Some of those still look good. Yes, don't give up on your passion. It's we live in the 21st century. It's fine to be a geek. We all know that. Look how many people go to Comic-Con. Fuck you. So yeah, this is it for the first episode of the DOS Nostalgia Podcast. Leave me a feedback on the website or on Twitter or on any of those other sources I just mentioned 30 seconds ago. And have a good day, night, week, weekend, whatever. And I'll hear you next
okay,
time.
Okay, ended up already.
All right, here we go. Bye. Yeah.